So I don't know what it was like for some of you, or any of you actually, to do that listening meditation, to do hearing. It can be very interesting to switch from doing using the breath primarily as a primary object for meditation to using sounds. And one of the reasons it's interesting is that sometimes hearing sounds can give us a very clear sense of what it's like to be aware without the filter of our ideas and our judgments, our interpretations, our commentary and all that. Whereas with our own inner experience, our meditative experience, sometimes a lot of that kind of filter is part of the experience. Whereas sounds, we just hear the sounds, and you hear it and it comes kind of cleanly to us, it can't come cleanly, and then maybe afterwards you notice, you start thinking about it. But in the hearing itself, you know, in that moment of hearing, it's just a sound arises and it's there and then it's gone. In a sense, that kind of hearing that kind of just arises in the moment is not a, doesn't belong to our self-centered self. It doesn't belong to our egotistical self. And so it gives us a sense of how awareness can exist without awareness being part of our usual identifications we have, usual ideas of right and wrong and who we should be and need be and what should be happening and not happening, and just all the kind of ways in which we identify with the self. And if you get a little sense of that through hearing, you can feel the kind of peacefulness or the spaciousness or the lightness, perhaps, that in which awareness exists. That awareness just exists there, kind of is there, and it registers something, it is aware of something, and it just kind of comes naturally to it, just there it is. And it happens in all our senses when something is strong enough. You're hungry and you're aware of the sensation of hunger arises in the field of awareness. A sound, a taste, a sensation in the body. And the more we can give up kind of our self-centered reference, referring all our experiences to some sense of self, some sense of ego, the lighter, I think, we'll experience ourselves and experience awareness itself. And some Buddhists then will point towards this experience of kind of light awareness, kind of open awareness, and just kind of can hear without any commentary. They'll describe that as being a feeling or experience of the nature of mind. That the mind, the nature of mind, doesn't make any comments, doesn't contract, doesn't grasp onto things. It just simply allows things to arise in that awareness in a very kind of natural and automatic kind of way, process. In the mindfulness tradition, we talk about bare attention, developing what's this quality called bare attention, which is kind of the same thing. It's attention or awareness which doesn't judge or make comments or put all kinds of associated thinking on top of the experience, but allows a particular experience to be there just as the way it appears. And that's it. And it's an unusual experience because many of us, I believe, have our commentary, our judgments and our evaluations, our associated thinking, entangled with the experience we're having. So the meditative process, the meditative experience, in a sense, is learning slowly, often, the process of beginning to disentangle all these associated kind of involvements. And can we just rest in what's called maybe the nature of mind, or can you rest in bare attention, just allowing things to be as they are, and things arise and they pass in awareness. And that kind of awareness that allows things to arise and pass is often a difficult place to rest, because many of us are so preoccupied with a sense of self. I mean, I suspect that most of you, if you pay attention to what you're thinking of most of the time, a lot of them are self-referential thoughts. We kind of dwell in this self-referential place. But awareness itself is not self-referential. It doesn't refer back to some idea of who we think we need to be. If we're a good person or worthy person or an unworthy person or whatever. It's just there being aware. So if we can rest there in this awareness rather than resting in our self-referential kind of thinking, we'll find a kind of lightness of being that is very different from the heaviness that can come when we're constantly preoccupied with ourselves. When I was thinking about what kind of talk to give tonight, I had two topics in mind. The first one was to talk about pain and talk about how physical pain is included as part of mindfulness practice. And then I decided I was more interested in talking about hearing and listening. But the two subjects are actually related in that both of them are very good places to understand how to be present, aware, with in this thing called bare attention, just to allow things to arise and not to add anything onto it. And pain is a good place to experience that, because when there's a lot of physical pain, it's kind of like we need to see the distinction between our entanglements, our reactivity to the pain, and the pain itself as it exists in awareness in order to cope. And so pain is a very good place to kind of make a gap or some space between our self-referential sense of being and the being of just being open to the experience that it's as it is. But hearing is, on the other end, is usually not so painful, but it's also kind of in a more pain-free way often. You can have sometimes kind of the same kind of experience. You can hear something, and then you notice what happens as a result of that, but the hearing just is there, and then it's over. And it's possible to kind of rest in that awareness that just stays with sensations as they rise and they pass and they rise and they pass. And it's very, very restful to do that, rather than getting caught up in the stories and the ideas and the judgments and all that. So hearing occurs at a different... I propose to you that that kind of primary raw level of hearing happens at a different level than the kind of self-referential concerns that many of us spend much of our time living at. It's kind of maybe a lighter or deeper or more open level of consciousness. I find it somewhat interesting that the disciples of the Buddha, the historical disciples who knew the Buddha, they weren't called students so much. What the word that was used to label them was they were shravakas. And shravaka, it means hearers. They're people who hear. And in part, it meant, literally it meant people who were alive at the time of the Buddha could hear his teachings directly from him. But I think maybe there's another meaning, that that the process of becoming free is very akin to the kind of openness, the kind of simplicity that comes with just allowing ourselves to hear in a kind of direct way. And then I'm reminded of the monastic rule of Saint Benedict. It begins with a word in Latin, ascolta, which means listen. So what a wonderful way for monastic rules to begin, to listen. Just listen. Listen to what's going on. If we can't listen, it's not possible to be mindful. It's not possible to be free. And then maybe a little bit, well, it's also very interesting that the word obedience and obey also comes from a Latin root meaning to listen. So the original idea of obedience wasn't an obligation, but rather it came from listening, and I would hope some kind of deep listening that sees or hears or senses very deeply what's the appropriate response is, and then from that kind of deep listening, responding to the world. So I believe that listening meditation, hearing meditation, sound meditation can itself help teach us a kind of open presence, a presence which doesn't put up any resistance or any defense about what's happening. And I think many of us will find that the experiences of daily life trigger a lot of things like resistance or defense or ambition or many kind of reactive kind of responses. There are hooks in which the experience gets stuck on within us. There's something in Buddhism called the eight worldly dharmas. And there are four pairs of things that people tend to get preoccupied in and kind of lose their vitality by being preoccupied by them. And I don't remember four of them. And maybe some of you remember the rest of them. They can remind me. But it's praise and blame, success and failure. What are the other two pairs? You know, Stephen?
Fame and disrepute.
Isn't that praise and blame? Maybe? Is it different?
So
fame and disrepute. Okay, fame and disrepute. What else? Praise and blame, success and failure, fame and disrepute. Well, then they're probably not so important for us. And one of the things we find as we begin bringing mindfulness to our life or paying attention is we have some degree of choice about where we put our attention, what we attend to, what we get, what we occupy awareness with. And one opportunity, one possibility is to let your attention stay preoccupied with the kind of things that have to do with the ego, with the self-identity, with self-preoccupation. And another choice is to relax that in a sense, or to open to something so simple and something which has nothing to do with the sense of self as just hearing. Sounds arise and they pass. The car arrives and drives by. Now I could sit here and think, oh my God, you know, someone just drove by and we want to have a quiet, silent place, and what a lousy meditation teacher I am for didn't make sure that no one drive up, and you know, and now you all think, you know, you never come back because it's so noisy, and that's all my preoccupation, right? In my self-referential way. And just hearing the sound and letting it be there and coming through, that is, it's very simple. And so simple you might think it's nothing. Why even bother with it? It doesn't mean anything. It has no reference. It doesn't mean anything for me, after all. What I'm proposing is that the ability to be open to that and just allow it to rise and pass in the nature of mind is actually a place to become free and become discover a wonderful lightness and joy in life. That's not possible if we're constantly contracted around some sense, what is it for me? What does it do for me? What benefit does it have for me? Now remember, you can learn the same thing through pain as with sounds. It doesn't have to be a pleasant sensation to learn this. So listening, listening and hearing are wonderful ways of learning about what mindfulness is. And I think that listening or hearing is almost kind of a nice synonym sometimes for mindfulness itself. That rather than trying to watch our breath or watch what's going on within us, the idea of listening to it or hearing it can lend itself to a little bit more, a less forceful or willful way of meditating or being mindful. Because hearing just kind of happens. If you sit quietly and listen to your breath inside, in a sense, or sit and sense your breath in the spirit of listening, it's much more, oh, this comes to me, rather than me kind of having a laser focus and kind of latching on and holding on and with a great striving effort. So to listen to our experience with a non-judgmental stance, with a non-judgmental kind of openness. The first koan in some schools of Zen that a student will practice with is the koan, who is it that hears the cries of the world? Who is it that hears the sounds of the world? And that the one who hears the sounds of the world traditionally in Zen Buddhism or in East Asian Buddhism is the name, the characters for the name of the Bodhisattva of compassion, the deity of compassion. It's the one who hears the cries of the world, is the deity of compassion. But the koan in Zen that the student then sits in meditation, kind of with this open question, who is it that hears the sounds of the world? Who is it that hears the rustling in the room? Who is it that hears the traffic in the freeway? Who is it? Who is that? If you're not listening with any kind of self-referential mode, and you allow hearing to come to you, who is it that hears my voice? And this is the first koan they do in Zen, because I think it's a very, very profound question. Who is it that hears? Now, what the answer is, in a sense, well, the wrong answer, but which is leads you to the right way, is no one hears. They're just hearing. Hearing hears, in a sense. giving ourselves a chance to listen, to take a mode of listening, to be a little bit receptive to our experience, gives us a tremendous more space to choose to respond or to act in the world more appropriately. And the way, one of the ways that I learned this for myself, it was a little bit painful at time for me, was I was working at a restaurant as a cook, and I showed up to at the changing room to change and put on my cook's uniform and get into the kitchen. And my shift was starting, and someone else's shift was ending, and he was in there changing into his clothes. And I kind of bounced off the street, kind of full of being vivacious and whatever, and kind of carefree and maybe a little bit silly or whatever. And I saw him, and immediately I saw him, I kind of said something really kind of jovially fun and silly. Well, very good-natured, you know, nothing wrong with that. Except what I hadn't done was I hadn't taken a minute or a second or 2 seconds, whatever, to just listen or pay attention, be receptive, where he was at, my friend. And what had happened was earlier that day, his best friend had just died. And so my joviality kind of was a little bit jarring for the place he was in. And it wouldn't have taken me very long just to kind of, you know, just to have spent a little bit, I wouldn't have taken away from my joy or anything, but my openness, but I could have taken a moment or two just to sense what was going on when I came in contact with this person, to have listened in a sense, rather than force myself onto the situation. And all of us know, I think, how wonderful it is to be listened to. And it's said, you know, that in psychotherapy that, I don't know if it's said, but maybe it could be said, you know, 90% of therapy is the person's ability to listen to you, to listen really well. And just simply create the open space, the kind of acceptance of just allowing the person to kind of speak and you just listen. Allowing the person to speak and you just listen. Children need that. Adults need, we all need that. The beautiful thing about mindfulness is that, in a sense, what we learn as adults is to do it for ourselves. We learn to have this open, non-judgmental space of listening to what's going on within us. In the Ramayana, Indian epic, there's a story of Rama walking through the woods with his companions. Rama heard someone call his name. None of the companions could hear anything, but he continued to hear a female voice calling him faintly and distinctly, "Rama, Rama." He followed the sound until he came to a boulder from which the cry seemed to emerge. Gently, Rama placed his hands upon it. The minute he touched the rock, it began to move and dissolve and transform. Finally, a dignified woman stood before him. Her name was Alaya. A curse had imprisoned her within the stone until someone touched it softly, lovingly. She had been there eons, crying out his name in a voice that only he could hear. So this is kind of, you know, our inner life is very much like this. In some form or other, it cries out our name. It cries out for our attention. And the beautiful thing about bringing our careful listening, our careful attention, our careful mindfulness to what's going on within us, to those petrified places within us, that mindfulness is kind of like lovingly and kindly putting our hands on the boulder. And then it begins to dissolve and transform, and this dignified being arise. And I'm fond of the story that in the story, the name of the woman that arises, Alaya, means in Sanskrit home. So it's the way we find our home, is by listening to where we're petrified, listening to the pains and the sorrows within us and the joys within us, which asking for attention. Not in a self-preoccupied way, not in a self-referential way, but in the same, we listen to it in the same spirit we listen to the sound. We listen to our pains, our joys, our fears. Oh, just allow it to come, allow it to be there. And that's the trick of mindfulness, to see the difference between listening in this kind of open way to our inner experience versus self-consciously discussing it and being preoccupied by it and reacting against it. Just listening. Oh, this is what's going on. I was also thinking today that I'm wondering if there's a difference between the word hearing and listening. And I think I read somewhere someone wanted to argue there's a difference. And perhaps the difference is that hearing is more receptive or passive, and listening is more active. So, you know, your mother says, listen to me. You know, your mother doesn't say, hear me so often or whatever. Listen to me, or, you know, or listen to that bird, or listen to that traffic. We don't say so often, hear that bird, or hear that traffic. We hear the bird. But listening is something like something we do a little bit more. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's... Anyway, whether I'm right or wrong about that, it points, I think, to a distinction that's useful to make between a kind of totally receptive passive awareness towards an awareness which is not totally passive, is not willful, but has some involvement, some kind of some energy or effort involved in order to be focused and be present. And we play with this, we play in mindfulness practice and meditation practice between these two modes of being, between a mode of being that's totally kind of receptive and effortless, and a mode of being where there's actually a little bit of effort there, not straining to listen, but just, you know, I'm listening in this direction now, I'm paying attention. And making some effort, some focused effort to pay attention to the breath or to sounds or whatever it is. And because we can distinguish between these two types of kind of hearing and listening, we can also then, when we focus on the more active type, we can then also study what is the motivation behind the way we listen. What is the quality of what we're trying to do when we're listening? And this is particularly interesting when we listen to our friends, when we listen to people speak. When we're listening, one of the things to pay attention to is, what is your motivation? What are you trying to do when you're listening to someone? I'm kind of amazed in myself how much when I listen to my friends, I'm only half listening or quarter listening or maybe not listening. Or they said something and off I go in my thoughts, you know, reacting and thinking, and how could they say that, or, you know, or start thinking about dinner or something. And then I what did you say? Can you repeat that? Or, you know, or kind of, you know, fake it until you kind of get your bearings again. And what's and that's maybe, you know, that's kind of our attention going off where it's not supposed to be. But to bring some gentle effort, gentle attention back to paying attention to our friend, what is in the motivation we have there? What are we trying to do as we listen? And that's for you to find out, is to ask. We often don't ask that. What is the motivation we have in listening? Many times we don't really want to listen. We want to kind of interrupt and state our point of view. And we interrupt people, we don't let them kind of finish. But if we really listen and allow ourselves to listen to someone else, why do we listen to them? What can we want in listening to them? And one of the interesting possibilities I would suggest is we listen in order to understand the whole person that's there. And I say that the whole person because often I think we listen just to the words, what they're actually saying. But there's actually more than just words being communicated. And there's more than just a person spouting words in front of you. There's a whole person there with history and feelings and life and relationships they have to you. And it's possible to kind of soften the listening, the awareness, and try to take in the whole person. What's the person saying? What's behind what the person's saying? What's the person really asking? What do they really want? Many times what we most want is not that someone understands our particular story or our particular piece of information. But we want to feel that someone else is connected with us, someone else has kind of heard and met us and given us their attention for a while. So there's a need for contact, not for you to literally understand the words. So sometimes if you just understand the words, you miss the person. So one of the motivations in listening is, how can I listen to the whole person? How can I pay attention to the whole person that's here? in this activity. And that requires not dwelling, not resting, centering oneself in a self-referential mode. What does this mean for me? Am I going to defend myself, or am I going to kind of put in my two bits, or how can I say something that's better than that, or, you know, but really kind of allow things to kind of be there, and maybe even allow things to be there in silence for a while, and listen in silence to the other person, rather than kind of filling the silence because you're nervous or something. So not only understanding the words, but understanding the feelings that go with the words. There's a saying somewhere, this may be a Sufi saying, God gave us two ears and one mouth, so we can listen twice as much as we speak. And then the Sufi poet Rumi wrote, since in order to speak, one must first learn to listen, learn to speak by listening. So we can learn to speak by listening carefully. So a lot of people ask, you know, how can I integrate mindfulness practice into my daily life? How can I make it more part of my regular life outside of the meditation cushion? And one of the ways is to listen. It's all. Just ensure that you give yourself enough time and enough ability, enough space to listen. To listen to others, to listen to the wind and the traffic, to listen to yourself. And that many times that's all that's required. Listening, listening. It's really remarkable to me how healing it is, how transformative it is, how it allows deep possibilities to arise when we listen. And then if we rush in with our two bits, I see this often as a teacher. You know, I often want to say, I'm listening to someone, they're talking to me about their meditation experience or their life or whatever. You know, I kind of want to say something. Hey, wait a minute, I have some good things to say here. And sometimes, you know, I'm not mindful enough and I rush in, where only fools will go. And sometimes I'll feel the motivation to say something, make a comment or suggestion or advice or whatever, and I'll hold back. I'm just going to listen for a while and see how things develop. And I'm really surprised the direction the conversation goes. I had no idea it was going to go in that direction. But if I had said something, I would have interrupted that flow of direction. Probably that flow of direction never would have happened again in that conversation. And so I've learned to try, and I'm still learning, to not be in a hurry to say what I think I could say, but rather listen and allow for possibilities. So now it's my turn to listen to you.
I just slightly wondered if attend and attention weren't good substitutes for hearing and listening.
I like the word. So Lewis asked, he wondered if attend and attention are substitutes for listening. So synonyms.
The two kinds.
Oh, the two kinds.
Speaking of, or an alternative to one or the other. Because someone would say with a bit of a raised finger, attend. And well, really, yeah, you're right. You know, not listening, not really giving, not really attending, and so, being an attendant, after all, following and helping, rather than taking the arm and pushing the person along, dragging them, swimming, and kicking.
Well, I like very much the word attend. Like you attend to your breath, attend to your experience, because in my mind, it is a little bit active. It's a little bit more active than just totally effortless awareness, but it has this feeling of, to my mind, not so much that you're a servant, but a feeling of me if you're more a nurturer. So you're there to kind of nurture, to attend, to really be respectful of this experience. Renee.
Well, what you're talking about is really interesting to me because where I work, I'm in a really noisy, to me, noise is distracting, and I'm trying to get work done, and, there's children crying, and printers going off, and phones are ringing. It's pretty wild, and so how do you suggest handling that? Because if I were to, I don't know. It's kind of hard to block it out and concentrate.
Oh, that's a big subject. Depends what you want to do. But one of the interesting ways of learning how to listen better or pay more attention is to pay attention to what keeps you from being open and attentive. So when I was working in a fast food restaurant, it was very noisy. The dishwasher and all these people cooking and all this stuff happening and all this activity to be done. What I paid attention to was not how to pay attention better, but how to get out of the way better. So I paid attention to my resistance and my judgments and my expectations, and I kind of noticed those and I let them go, and then I would just throw myself into the activity more fully, and I let the listening arise when there was no more any resistance.
Yeah, I can notice a lot of resistance in myself.
So listen to your resistance, and perhaps it's possible to soften that and allow the sounds and all the noise just to be there. So rather than forcing yourself to try to listen better, you can just attend and be very honest about the resistance, and maybe through that honesty about it, maybe there can come softening, and then you find yourself listening, you find yourself more at ease in the situation. You see this a lot. It's really wonderful. It happens regularly enough on retreats. We try to make retreats kind of a silent place. It's pretty quiet. But sometimes, it doesn't work out that way. You sit down next to someone in the hall, and that person has a really raspy breath, and there's like rasping. and you're sitting there quietly and trying to follow your breath, and all you're aware of is their breath. And they'll go, and the person who's listening to that will go to the teacher and say, it's kind of difficult. Can't you ask them to quiet down? Or can't you? It's terrible. I can't stand it. And it's not so uncommon for the student to get very little sympathy from the teacher. rather, the teacher encourages them to go back and notice the resistance and see if they can simply allow that sound to be present as if there's no inside and outside, as if there's an open channel for it. It just comes and goes, and there's no judgments, no ideas, no expectations offer resistance to that experience. And it happens quite regularly then. A few days later, the student will come back and say, well, it got really terrible, but then it suddenly, or at some point I found, it was just sound. Just like my breath is just my breath. It was just like the sound of, it was slightly unpleasant, but it was just a sound. And it was no inside and outside. My sense of boundaries kind of dissolved. It was just hearing. And they're no longer troubled at the retreat. Elaine.
Listening involves a lot of humility, and it brings up right speech. Because so frequently what happens when I don't want to listen is I'm so pleased with my own ideas that I really feel that everyone should know what they are. and this is a real good example of just this very moment. For the last 2 minutes, I've been thinking of what I was going to say. I think of this so closely connected with right speech, and in my case, at least, humility, that other people have some pretty good ideas too if I can listen.
Yes.
I heard you say something last week that I really liked. Sounds right, but I don't understand it. something like, without a sense of resistance, there's no sense of the sacred. Did you say something like that?
Yes.
You explain it to him? yes, I said something like that. And if I can try to keep it simple, the explanation. There's not much which is sacred in Buddhism, though I use the word maybe more often than I should. But one of the things, one of the sacred things in Buddhism is, sometimes we use the word noble. The word is arya, as you know, is the Four Noble Truths. And really understanding and appreciating each of the Four Noble Truths is to understand something sacred, something very special, where the liberation is possible, where freedom is possible. When there is contraction or craving or greed or pushing away, resistance in some form, if it's there unconsciously and operating, you know, and you can make a mess out of things, a lot of suffering. But if you see it completely, thoroughly, and very honestly, and you really see it as the second noble truth or as a first noble truth, then that is a sacred experience. So it's not a matter, the sacredness is not a matter of once you get rid of all your suffering, and then everything's dandy and nice. But actually you can find the sacred in the midst of the life as it is. So that's the short answer. And we can talk more later. The last thing that occurs to me to say, you'll apologize me for me now jumping in with my last two bits. At Spirit Rock, the Spirit Rock Teaching Collective and the staff and community up in Marin, and also have adopted what's called a council as a way of meeting and having discussions and conversations about business and all kinds of things. And council involves sitting in a circle and then in various ways having a conversation that's very respectful, that allows different people to speak in different kind of order. The most simple way is just to talk in a circle. But there are other ways of using counsel also. And it's sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get things done, but it allows for a kind of much deeper communication. It allows for everybody to be heard, and it allows for a kind of more creative arising of things than everybody just kind of speaking out of turn or whatever they want, the way they usually are at meetings. But there's rules about how to talk when you talk in counsel. And one of the rules is you're not supposed to prepare what you're going to say. So you go around in a circle, you're supposed to be listening to what everybody else has to say. And if you're preparing, you're not listening. And the other interesting thing that I've seen is that if you don't prepare, but it's your turn to speak and you speak what you think, you'll be surprised what you say. And it's really nice to be surprised.
Are you ever sorry what you said? Regret what you said?
In that context, I never have been. Elsewhere I have, but I think there's enough...
Prepare too much.
I think that in that context, perhaps, is that there is a lot of mindfulness and a lot of safety and a lot of openness, that it allows kind of for the deeper understanding, a deeper... Also, you talk more personally. This is how it is for me. And so you're really talking something as something very... When you're talking personally and honestly out of what your experiences and your insights are, I don't think you'll make a fool of yourself. I hope you never do. Yes.
I missed how you worded something about
you have to listen before you can learn to speak, and then the conclusion is that you should listen before you learn to speak.
I'll read it again. It's from Rumi. Since in order to speak, one must first learn to listen. He's redundant. Learn to speak by listening. Last one, and then we should stop.
Okay, do you have an email address?
I have two of them, but the danger is, I seldom listen to, unless I seldom read them. So, you know, it's like...
You listen before you speak.
Yes. And so I can give it to you, and, you know, it might be a few months before I check it. Calling me is a lot faster. Or writing me is faster.
It's just that it might be interesting to have even have a discussion group.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure most of us have access. It's an interesting thought.
Oh, it's a very nice. Very nice thought.
Mm-hmm. We can do it with no
game.
Okay, so thank you all for tonight. Be well.